Hello and welcome once again to The Way I See It, and my name is Vanessa Coleman. Now, today I have got two guests with me who are from London. They are both gay, they're openly gay, and they're also from different countries. So first of all, I'm going to introduce you to...
Marco Antonio.
How do you say your name?
Marco Antonio.
Marco Antonio. And you are from?
Brazil.
Brazil?
Yes.
Oh, and so you speak Portuguese?
Portuguese, yes.
Yes. And you live in London?
I live in London.
And you like it?
I love it.
You love it. Okay. Yes. And my next guest is?
Is Arda Kaya.
How do you say that?
Arda Kaya.
Oh, yes. And you live in?
I live in London.
Okay. And what do you particularly like about London?
I love the cosmopolitan life, the busy life, and everything can happen everywhere in London.
How do you find being gay in London? Is it good?
Is much more open than France and Turkey or the other countries.
Because you are a Muslim.
I'm Muslim.
So it must be difficult being a Muslim and being gay. Is that right?
Yes, but I never said myself I'm gay as well.
You didn't
say. I don't accept myself as a gay.
You don't accept yourself?
No, I just leave it open. I don't want to put myself in a
box. This is it. You don't want to put a label on, do you?
I don't want to put a label.
Well, that's funny you should say that, because I did a program recently and the one thing I hate is labels. Yeah. How do we know, just by a little label, what somebody is like, how they're feeling, how their heart beats? We don't know, do we?
No, we don't know. Anyone can be everything, like inside is like personal and...
Yeah. But I guess I didn't realise, because I don't know much about France. I wouldn't have thought that it was that difficult in France. Is it because there's a big Muslim population there?
As well, and I think sexuality is something personal. And
yeah.
Even as if I was straight, I won't like to walk hand by hand, or I won't like to be too much demonstrative. So I don't do it with my boyfriend, but...
It's just about who you are. But you've got to admit that England, well, let's talk about London, very liberal city. Yeah.
But even inside the gay communities, there is racism.
Is there?
Yeah.
What kind of racism?
Like, they make a difference between people being active, passive.
Yeah.
And they make a discrimination on the body.
Yeah.
Gay is very discriminating against...
What? You mean the body if you haven't got body beautiful?
You don't have body beautiful, would you?
Really?
You don't come to the parties or...
Okay, so really, it's a bit bitchy.
It's a bit bitchy. It's a lot of bitchy.
Well, I'd never realised that.
We are. We judge each other.
But so you're guilty as well?
We judge our friends, we judge... Yeah.
Why?
The nature of the beast.
Okay, I hope I'm not going to get lots of gay people having a go at me after this. Well, anyway, you at the moment you're a guest in my house, so it's been a great pleasure to meet you, and I hope that when you decide to visit Bournemouth again, that you will come and see me.
Oh yeah, for sure. I will come.
Good.
I had a really good time, and I think I don't believe in coincidence. So I think I met you because there is a meaning.
Yes, so do I.
Until now.
As I say, it was a shock when I put this on the internet, and the next thing is you popped up and wanting to stay so quickly. You know, I thought I'd have a week or two before. You know, I'd have to think about it, but no. And here you are, and here you are now about to go. But I have to say, it's been a great pleasure to meet you both. And if all my guests were like you, then the world would be a better place.
Yeah, finger crossed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So following that interview with Marco and Arda, I now have with me Jonathan Hines, who is an old friend of mine. Well, he's not that old, really, but you know what I mean. Anyway, actually, he interviewed me a while back, and we'll talk about that in a minute, because he works for a radio station. And anyway, he is gay, openly gay, and not only that, guess what, folks? He belongs to UKIP. So here we are, a pair of, well, I'm certainly not homophobic, am I, Jonathan? Anyway, welcome to my little program, Jonathan. So perhaps you'd like
to... many things, Vanessa, but not homophobic.
Exactly. Well, yes, we've put that one to bed anyway, metaphorically speaking. So, Jonathan, tell us a little bit about you, what you do, and then I'd like to for you to say what your thoughts are on what you heard Marco and Arda say. So first of all, tell us a little bit about you.
Right, well, we're talking here from Bournemouth, and I was born in Bournemouth in 1979. Already, I'll be 36 in December. And yes, I'm a eccentric Sagittarian.
gay eccentric.
huge Francophile. Always felt more at home in France than in my own country, which is strange, but I do love Bournemouth, and wherever I end up going or wherever I end up working, Bournemouth will always be home.
Why are you a Francophile then? How did that come about?
Ever since I first started learning the language at about 12 or 13, and my first visit to France on a school exchange, that was where it started. Just felt this incredible emotion whenever I was in France, and I haven't felt that in any other European country. There's something about France, I'm almost certain that I was French in at least one previous life, if you subscribe to that sort of thinking.
Yeah.
And by the time I was 19, I was speaking almost a native level. Now, you know, I'm 35 now, but my French is almost as good as my English, 95% the same as my English. And I've always been, you know, fascinated with languages, words, accents, fluent in Spanish as well. My French is the best.
But I'm surprised that you haven't got a job that uses this as you're so passionate about
this,
it.
This is interesting. Yes, I did used to want to do translation and interpretation when I was a teenager, but I wouldn't want to do that now. Having said that, another good cliche there, having said that, I've always dreamt of working between France and England. I've been on the radio.
How about Calais? We could stick you there, Jonathan, right now.
I think I could make some very good programmes from there, couldn't I?
Yes.
Very interesting.
Well, you could certainly...
Very interesting interviews.
Well, you certainly could translate. Anyway, let's...
Well, we can go back to that. I have done some radio in France, and I've always dreamt of working between the two countries, and I spent a lot of time over there. At the moment, I'm very much involved in building UK Talk Radio. That's uktalkradio.org, which is a radio station which I was involved with pretty much from the beginning, and we're getting bigger and bigger, and we're based in Bournemouth, and I do the lunchtime show between.
Is it live?
It's often done about an hour or two before, so it's not quite live. It's
so you can iron the creases.
That's right. Yeah, you can go back to the beginning again and scrap bits. Iron the creases. I like that. That's good. Just last week, I started to do some live presenting, and obviously there's so many details you need to constantly keep an eye on when you're doing.
I think also it must be the fact that you know, this is the real thing, and it must put you under pressure.
This is it, because the thing that can happen is that deadly silence if you don't.
Yes.
If you're not ready at the end of a song.
Yeah.
Or if you're delayed in putting a song on, you can have that dead sound, yeah, on that dead noise on the radio where it's just, there's a gap, and that's the worst thing a listener can hear.
I don't know about you, but when I first started doing this, there were lots of you knows and ums.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, terrible. When you listen back, it's terrible.
Or as the younger generation often say, like, don't they?
Yeah.
It was like, and it was like.
Yeah.
Or as the French say, quoi. Or quoi is what.
Yeah.
But if a French person is a bit nervous and they're not quite sure what they're saying, they'll just keep putting a quoi in at the end of every sentence, you know.
So do you dream in French or do you dream in English?
Could be either. It could be either. I can think in both languages, but I was born... I don't have any French connections. So it still is more natural for me to think in English, but I can switch between the two quite easily. I'm 50-50,
yeah,
French and English.
So going back to the interview with Marco and Ada, what do you agree with what they said? I didn't realise. Would you say that you're very judgmental of other gay people?
I have mixed a lot on the gay scene in London and in Bournemouth. There is a lot of promiscuity on the gay scene. And I'm not sure if that's necessarily what gay people want, but it's the way it happens, it's what happens. And it's not necessarily a fulfilling life or what people choose, but it happens.
But he was saying about the body beautiful and about being bitchy, really. Do you think, have you encountered this?
There is a lot of shallowness, a lot of, like with any nightclub, I suppose, you know.
So it's so only many nightclubs, is it? Is this? Do you think this is...
I haven't encountered it a lot. I've also met a lot of gay people who don't associate on the scene. They don't do the scene. So they're what you might call anonymous. You know, they are gay, but they don't to clubs or bars.
So would you say they don't go out and socialise? Okay, well, speak for yourself then.
It's just made it a lot easier now, Vanessa, for people to find somebody because of the internet.
Yeah.
So now they can go onto a website where there are other people and they know who those people are. Everybody's there for the same reason. The trouble is, you have got less choice if you're gay, because obviously we are, even though we're a sizable minority, we are a minority. And sometimes you're not sure who is and who isn't, because some gay men are very masculine.
Well, funny enough...
And some lesbian women are very feminine.
Yeah. While we were filming Close to the Edge, which apparently is going to be out on BBC4 later in the year, probably the end of September, beginning of October, there was one very handsome cameraman, and I said, "Have you got a girlfriend?" He went, "Oh, no, sorry, I bat for the other side."
Mm.
And I was very surprised because he did look very masculine. There were no feminine traits that I...
No.
Because there were a couple of the other people in the on the crew who were, no doubt about it, gay.
Mm.
And one in particular, definitely. Mm. It stood out like a sore thumb. But they were all really lovely. But there was a difference in their whole persona and attitude.
And it's changed so much in the last 10, 15 years. As you say, probably the majority of gay men are obviously a little bit more effeminate, but I've met so many gay men that are also very masculine.
Well, in fact, this guy went out with...
And they don't go out on the gay scene at all, but websites is something... It is a possibility now.
Isn't it funny how we have stereotypes in our minds? I mean,
yes.
This guy
yes.
said he was going out with a policeman. And I mean, I suppose you think of policemen as kind of butch type people or like firemen. And it's funny how we actually do label and think about people in a certain image, a certain view.
And this happens a lot. I understand, you know, we all do it to an extent. I suppose it allows people to have categories in their mind or maybe understand things better, but they are stereotypes, yeah. And so a lot of gay people don't associate on the scene at all. They're very private.
Yeah.
But those are the people you're likely to meet now, for example, on websites.
Yeah.
And also the gay scene, Vanessa, isn't what it was. The gay scene used to be a lot more niche, maybe a bit underground. Possibly.
Yeah.
You know, very much apart. Now, certainly in Bournemouth, I've noticed this, and I know it's going to be more and more like this. Similarly, in many places, you go to a gay bar now, and you're likely to get a lot of heterosexual visitors who feel comfortable going in there. They think it's fun as well.
Yeah.
They feel they can relax, have a night out. You know,
this is a different atmosphere.
The women feel they can relax without men hitting on them, so to speak.
Yeah.
They might get the odd woman hitting on them, but and the gay scene now and the rest of the scene much more have moved
integrated.
Closer together.
Yeah, they're integrated.
Integrated.
Well,
word, yeah.
I used to have a flat just round the corner from the Exchange in Bournemouth, and I used to love, I could literally...
Which fall, is the gay scene in Bournemouth, the Exchange, yeah.
Which I literally could fall out of bed and walk into the Exchange. And I found it fascinating. I mean, I just find... gay people generally can be very interesting, artistic, creative people. And yes. You find them a lot in the media, don't you? They something about it. Though I'm very caring. I find them sensitive, in the people that I've met anyway, sensitive and caring.
There's a very dishy Chinese one guy on the TV screen at the moment. I like the Oriental men. Yes.
I
was distracted just looking across over there.
That says a lot.
Turn that off, Vanessa.
That says a lot about my interviewing. That says a lot about my interviewing skills. So another thing, Jonathan.
They're very good, Vanessa. I'm shocked. I'm surprised. Pleasantly surprised. Pleasantly very surprised. Anyway, I digress.
So I understand that you're also a Christian.
Yes, I'm a liberal Christian.
And what does that mean, a liberal Christian?
I've got a very strong faith, which I've always had. But what frightens me is what you might call Christian fundamentalism, where everything is black and white.
Yeah.
If you don't agree 100% with everything, then you're wrong. And the belief that there's only one faith, only one true religion, and that if somebody doesn't believe the same as you or doesn't believe in the Bible or in Christ, then suddenly that makes them a damned or a bad person. I think that sort of thinking is very dangerous, because you're never going to get everybody seeing things exactly the same way.
No.
You're always going to have different angles and different views, even within one denomination. And I've always been quite comfortable with... Well, the reason I say liberal Christian is maybe, you know, I'm interested in things and I'm accepting of things which other Christians would not be able to accept, you know, for example.
Well, being gay is one thing, isn't it?
Most Christians say, you know, there's nothing wrong with being gay, and they wouldn't reject you for being gay, but it's the practicing, and that's that cliche word they always use, practicing. And to me, I think for a lot of gay men, Christian or not, no matter how strong their faith, it would be totally unworkable. They couldn't go through their whole life with no romance, no intimacy. You know, if you're gay, you're gay. More often than not, you're born that way. You've got the same needs emotionally and physically as somebody who's, you know, in the heterosexual majority. And the idea of going through your whole life, because you're a Christian, not being able to have any relationship is, to me, unworkable, unthinkable, terrible, shocking.
Well, so, okay, that brings me neatly on to then, what about Catholic priests? To me, personally, it doesn't seem right to ask somebody to be celibate, and obviously it doesn't seem to work much, does it? Because look at all the cases we hear about the sexual things.
And you know, child abuse is obviously something. What could be worse? What could be more?
Somebody you trust, your priest, and who abuses you. This, to me, is terrible.
Obviously, one, you know, you wouldn't try and justify any of this for a second. But I think if Catholic priests were allowed to have a normal, healthy, romantic and sexual life, With one partner, because that's the way it would work, it'd be monogamous, and it had a decent love life and had their basic needs fulfilled, God-given needs, that God designed us, God created sex, he designed us to, you know, we are...
But then one could argue about man and woman, couldn't one, about were men designed to have sex with one another? One could look at that.
There is that argument, of course. I just think that God created a minority that are different. Like with any group of people, where you've got human beings, you'll always have people that are a bit different, who are in a minority and don't fit in. You always have these quirks. And
well, they're normally the interesting people. And I have to say, Jonathan, I put myself in this quirky minority because I guess I'm not like the norm, what you would call the normal person. But I definitely believe in liberalism. I believe if I don't hurt anybody, you know, live and let live. That's the way
And a lot of gay people, we talk about being liberal, but actually a lot of gay people, surely, have got very, very high moral standards, just like many straight people might have. And they just want to be, they just want to find the right person and settle down.
Yeah.
So it's not even as if we have to be tolerant or liberal, because they just want to be able to settle with the person they like, find that person.
Yeah.
And most gay people do. I think a lot of gay people might not say they want that, or they might have not realized that that's what they want because they think it's unattainable. Often, you know, what happens is the promiscuity, the sleeping around, which is an endless cycle. I think what's great now is that, you know, gay people can get married and they can commit themselves to somebody. And I think, you know, we're a minority that can't or doesn't reproduce. The world's overpopulated. Why is it a problem for the world if there's a minority of people that can't or don't reproduce children?
Yes, okay, they can't reproduce, but look what we've got now. We can just take Elton John, et cetera, and lots of people, that they still want children, so it doesn't matter whether they can reproduce. I mean, somebody produces the child for them.
A lot of people have struggled to get their head around that, haven't they, Vanessa, because it is still quite a modern thing, isn't it?
Well, I have to say, I speak as you find. And the gay people that I've met are very caring. To me, this is the way I look at it.
Yes.
I'd rather have children living with gay parents who absolutely love them than living in relationships where there's abuse and violence. That's, you know, if you've got two loving men or two loving women and they want a child, I can't see anything wrong with that.
I agree. I know it takes a lot of people time to get their head around it, but I also think it's going to get easier for children. I think as children in schools are educated about these subjects and encouraged to respect people who are different.
The only thing,
and then we're becoming more understanding. But I think there's going to be less bullying if a child does have two males or two females as parents.
I think the only thing I would say is I think the children should be brought up that this may not be the normal parents, but we so wanted you, if you said that to the child, rather than think. Because what I wouldn't like to think is that the child is then brought up to be gay because they're with gay people.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? That they should be brought up in an open way that when they get older, that they can choose.
This is it.
What they want to be, you know, that they wouldn't be prejudiced in.
And often it annoys me when people talk about, when people, often very, very conservative Christians, for example, when they say things like, oh, the promotion of homosexuality in schools. You can't promote homosexuality. What you can promote is,
like, selling a chocolate bar or something.
Someone will make a decision, will know whether they are heterosexual or gay or a bit of both. Somebody will know. You don't promote anything. You allow people, you educate people to understand these things. And if they are gay, they don't have to hide it. They can be open about it if they think that's the way that they're made.
So
that's what you're promoting. You're promoting understanding and, I wouldn't even say tolerance, just understanding.
So you're talking about a school.
You can't promote homosexuality because if someone's attracted to the opposite sex, how can you promote homosexuality?
So tell me, when did you know you were gay then?
I knew right through childhood that I was romantically or physically attracted to other boys, but I also did feel romantically attracted to girls as well. And I was very much...
So you want your cake and eat it?
Well, I...
Actually, that's pretty
at
typical.
At the time, I did, if you like, want... Not in a selfish way, want my cake and eat it, but I thought that...
You could have it both ways.
I thought the way that it would go is I'd have a wife and she would know from the beginning, I'd be open long before we got married, that I would need a man as well. And it would be like that, you know, I'd have one of each. Which doesn't sound terribly workable or realistic. But I was convincing myself that I was bisexual until I was about 22. I met somebody when I was 22 I fell in love with, and then I came to terms with the fact that I told practically everybody. A lot of them knew anyway, or half knew or suspected. I told them that, and told myself that I was 97% gay.
What about your parents?
I mean, I'm comfortable with women. I've been attracted to girls. I've been romantically involved with a couple of women in the past. The last girlfriend was 14 years ago, so it's a while now. And it was romantic.
But it didn't light your fire.
No, I'm comfortable. I'm comfortable with straight men and gay men. Comfortable with women as well. But there was no desire. Put it like that. You know, the romance was there and the romantic feelings, and I can see that the woman's attractive.
Yeah.
Or to me anyway. But there was no desire, no drive. You know.
Yeah.
To put it diplomatically.
Yes, because people might not be listening to this after the watershed. So how did? What about your parents? What happened then?
I've been very, very fortunate. I often mention this in my blogs on Facebook.
You are a prolific blogger, aren't you?
That makes two of us, doesn't it? Yeah. We never shut up, do we?
No.
We must be notorious.
About your parents.
Yeah.
So
I've been very, very fortunate in that. We talk about homophobia, and homophobia is a very real thing, even in today's Britain.
Mm.
Some gay people have been through hell, ostracised by family. They've been the victims of physical, emotional violence. It's still very real. Even in today's Britain, homophobia is alive and kicking, although much less than it used to be. I've been very, very fortunate. You know, almost too good to be true. I mean, nobody has been rude or hostile to me. I've never encountered any sort of threat, really. All my heterosexual male friends have all been fine. Maybe that's because I'm quite masculine and not obviously gay, so they feel more comfortable because of that. All my friends have been great. They haven't changed their attitude. Everybody knows. And we talk about the older generation. We talk about people over the age of 70 being less accepted.
I like the way you're looking at me then, Jonathan.
No way. Yeah, and we often talk about people over the age of 70 or over the age of 65 being less accepting or more homophobic, but I haven't found that. I found just as much potential hostility in the younger generation as amongst the over 70s. Lots of people over the age of 70 that I've known, I mean, friends of all ages and from all walks of life, and they've all been quite relaxed with me, you know, my senior citizen friends. Sounds funny, don't senior citizen friends. You know what I mean? None of them have been particularly any more homophobic than the younger ones I've found.
I see that you do have a bit of difficulty on Facebook because of your being in UKIP. How have you found that? Surely that's given you more grief. You're in UKIP than it does being gay. Do you think so?
Yes, I absolutely. I never thought of it that way, Vanessa. But yes, I've had a lot more hostility
for being in UKIP.
I mean, there are people from all walks of life and all ages in UKIP, most of which I found to be very level-headed, charitable, lovely people.
Have you really? I mean, I don't know about you, but I have not encountered anybody who I would class as racist. And I've been in the party
for
11 years.
And if they are, they're on the fringes and they don't last.
Yeah.
They don't last because we gang up on them.
The core group of the people that we know are just regular kind of people, aren't they? Do you know what I mean? The people that just care about the country and what's happening.
And the crazy thing is, for me, it is a very small minority of people that are really, really anti-UKIP. It's a very small minority, but the trouble is there are very vocal and potentially very, very dangerous minority. And on my Facebook, most people are nothing like that. I'm very open about UKIP, and most people, even if they've got reservations about UKIP, and that's been caused by a very small minority of unbalanced, or, you know, unpleasant people that have associated themselves with UKIP and told people they're UKIP and caused immense damage to the party.
Mm.
They are a small minority. This is what some people have heard about, and there are some people who've got genuine reservations about UKIP. They're not bigoted. They've got genuine reservations, which often I've been able to clear up with them.
Yeah.
And these reservations are born of the things they've heard certain crackpot individuals coming out with. And of course, as we know,
well, the media
stir
up a storm.
That's right. And people have heard these things, and these things are shocking. And of course, that we're as shocked as they are.
Mm.
But it's given people the wrong impression. And I like to think over the last couple of years, I've done a lot, thanks to Facebook, thanks to social media, in clarifying what UKIP is really about, or the majority of UKIP is.
Well, Jonathan, I'd love to. I could talk to you for hours, but I'm afraid our time is about up. But thank you.
Until part two.
But thank you. Yes, we'll talk again because, you know, we're going to be working on the out campaign. So have a great day, Jonathan.
Thank you very much. And you can hear me on UK Talk Radio. That's uktalkradio.org between about 11 and 2 o'clock Monday to Friday.
I won't charge you for that, Jonathan. Bye.
Just a quick plug at the end.